Welcome to the Living Dice Podcast. Today's episode, The Cipher System. Hi, I'm Trent with my cohort, Stuart. Say hello, Stuart.
Hello.
And today's episode is what?
The Cipher System.
All right, so what is the Cipher System?
Let me take you on a journey back in time.
Oh, wow. This sounds like an episode of Nova.
This was August 2013 in a small conference room in the Marriott Hotel in Indianapolis at a little event called Gen Con. I'm sure you remember it, Trent, because you were there with me. We decided on our schedule to try out this thing called Numenera. Never heard of it. We kind of knew they had a Kickstarter that went off. Didn't really know much or anything about the game, but they were putting on an event that was win a game with Monty Cook as the GM. So why not? I mean, Monty Cook is a venerable icon in the RPG world. It would be fun to play with him.
Notable for his contribution to third edition Dungeons and Dragons, for those that don't know.
You're ruining my story.
All right, continue.
So we play this little game called Numenera. And I would venture to say for me personally, it was probably the most impactful role-playing game event of my life, because not only was it a good time, unfortunately we didn't win and play with Mr. Cook, but when we went back to the hotel that night, I don't know if you remember, but I immediately went online and purchased the core book. And after we went home from that trip, we switched over our home game to Numenera, and I have not been the GM of a game other than the Cipher System since that point in time. And that was August 2013. So, what is the Cipher System? Well, dang it, it's the system I love the most.
Yes, but why? Your love has to be justified.
Okay. So you want the nuts and bolts.
Yeah.
Well, we are both GMs, probably more than not. And this system was probably the most GM-friendly game that I had played. And there are others. There are other GM-friendly games. But this one is literally anything that you want to adjudicate as a GM, you got to figure out how hard it is from level 1 to 10. That's really from the rules. That's all you need to know to adjudicate problems. Now, you know, you could go into specifics on how the player rolls and what they do to get there, but really that's it. So gone were the days of stat blocks for creatures, though they still exist. They're not needed. You could come up with stuff on the fly. You didn't need to know anything special about traps or, you know, how to do anything. How tough was something? I mean, everything just came down to this 1 through 10 number. And that matched with the elegance of the system, it just sold me. Now, honestly, and I don't know if we want to move on from Numenera yet, but the world of Numenera is really good. It didn't knock me out just from my own personal style, but the system did. Now, The Strange, when that came out, which is the same Cipher System rules, that knocked me out from a genre perspective. It's literally, it's a science fiction game, but going to different alternate realities, you can make that game anything you want it to.
All right, before we get too far along, let's kind of differentiate the two here. So the Cipher System is an independent system that applies to several games, but the initial implementation of it was Numenera. Now, the Numenera world is several billion years in the future. It's post-humanity multiple times. Magic doesn't really exist. It's just technology that's so advanced it appears like magic. It is Brian Aldiss, Billion Year Picnic, Stalker the movie sort of super advanced technology you cannot possibly understand, and everything is weird. Now, that's Numenera. The Strange is, much like the TV show Sliders, a bit more advanced, but the same idea. You go in between different universes, and the different universes have different rules and different genres. There's a fantasy one. There is, what are some of the other ones? There's a Native American one that's, there's one where Africa, ancient Africa, is controlled by gray aliens. There's a bunch. Yeah. It's sort of GURPS-like in that sense.
And one other thing to add about The Strange is these recursions are fueled by a popular fiction. The more popular something is, the more power their recursion has. So while the books, obviously they create their own recursions for IP reasons, playing the game as a GM, I mean, you can source any work of fiction and make it a recursion in The Strange.
Right. And in fact, you mentioned intellectual property. That's an ongoing issue, but several of the ones that have achieved open source status, their copyrights have expired. Basically anything published before 1922 in the United States. That includes Oz. There's an Oz world, as in Wizard of Oz. There is Barsoom, which is the John Carter stories. And, of course, Cthulhu in its infinite variety.
Yeah, Alice in Wonderland 2, Sherlock Holmes. Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a multitude of ways. But the system itself, I'm with you on that. I think that's what really sold me, because I came from 3.5 D&D to 4, and 4 and I did not get along very well. I thought they made too many sacrifices to the MMORPG play style, and that wasn't really for me. I found it a little constricting, and it pushed itself towards the online or the physical tabletop too much. Almost all the powers in 4th edition D&D are some flavor of pushing some miniature around a board. They can dress it up any way they want, but too much of it was simply maneuvering on a hex or a grid. Numenera rolls into my life, and as you say, everything is a 10. Before we continue, though, I think we should explain what we mean by that. So, for example, I want a level 5 monster. So, Stu, you want to hit the monster, of course. So, what do you do to hit the monster?
Well, I would have to make a level 10. Or, sorry, level 5 monster, I'd have to make a level 5 roll.
All right, suppose you have no combat skill, you're a mook, you don't know how to do anything. What number do you need?
All right, well, you roll a 20-sided dice, and I guess a brief comment. A lot of people wrap this into a D20 system because it is a 20-sided dice, but that's inaccurate. Yes, I guess at the most fundamental level, it's a D20 system because you use a D20, but it's not like the other D20 systems. So you roll a D20 and its result divided by 3 is what you need to roll. So if I need to roll a level 5 check, I would have to roll 15 or higher on the dice.
I don't know. That sounds like a hard roll. Can you make it easier?
Well, there are 3 ways you can make it easier. You can be skilled in something, and the skill system in the Cypher system is definitely one of my favorites of all systems. Some other systems do this and something similar, but it is an open skill system, as in you can pick whatever you want. You could pick, 17th century Russian dancing as your skill. I mean, it doesn't matter. You pick whatever you want for your skills, and it's your job to make it fit into the game. So say you're trying to, cross a raging river on a fallen tree, you can say, well, I've got skill in 17th century Russian dancing. Maybe I'll apply that for my balance roll. Obviously, in reality, no one picks that. You'll pick traditional things like stealth and climbing and all of that stuff. But that said, that is one of the ways you make the check easier. If you're skilled in something, the level goes down by 1. If you're specialized in something, the level goes down by 2. So if I was trained in being able to hit whatever this level 5 creature was, or trained on expertise in using whatever weapon I had, that level 5 would now be level 4, and I would only need to roll the 12 or higher on the dice.
You said three. That's one.
Step two is assets. Assets are kind of like a catch-all for anything that might help you, whether I've got high ground, whether I have thrown sand in the opponent's face, you know, if I have a super sort of awesomeness, you know, so whatever can help me in my attempt at whatever I'm doing can be an asset. So you can have up to two assets. So say I'm fighting this foe, I previously jumped up onto a table next to him, and now I have an asset. So, and I'm still trained, so that level 5 drops to level 4 for the training and drops to level 3 for the asset. And at level 3, that means I need a 9 or higher on the D20 dice to succeed.
All right, number 3.
Number 3 is called effort. And really all that means is you just try really hard. Now, there is negatives to this as well sometimes, because you have a pool of health and ability points that fuel your not only your life force, but also what you can do. And spending effort will draw from this pool points. So you can't, if you do it infinitely, you'll just basically kill yourself from trying too hard. But when you really want to try hard, you can do it. And that is another way to drop the target number. So if I...
All right, so you've got training.
Yeah.
You've got your asset, and you've decided to burn a few of your precious points to apply effort. So the 15th goes down to 12, to 9, to 6. So now you have to roll higher than a 6 on a d20.
That's correct. And all of that sounds a lot, but once you start playing, it just rolls. It just rolls, and combats are really efficient in the Cypher system. Some other systems, when you have some high-level creatures, I mean, you can spend hours, literally hours, running through that combat. And I just, last weekend, we fought a level 9 creature, I think, which is near the top. It was a top-level creature. And we went through that combat in about 30 minutes, but I extended it a little bit for dramatic reasons.
So all that said, that's actually the main selling point for me, is because I don't mind when the rolling is part of the game. I mean, because most role-playing games, excluding Amber, that is the point of the game. You're supposed to solve issues with, you know, some element of randomness, some dice rolling. But I say this with the most amount of respect for game designers. Far too many role-playing games are obsessed with the mechanics to the detriment of the story.
I agree. And this really is the opposite here. The story is first. If you look at characters, you know, pretty much anyone can do anything. Now, you know, those,
they can try.
Yeah, they can try it. If someone's trained, if they have special equipment, or if they try hard, I mean, that definitely makes it better, but it in no way limits it. Like in some games, if you want to, say, sneak into the bad guy's hideout, if you don't have stealth as a skill, it's a waste of your time. In the Cypher system, that's not true. I mean, the best that you could do with being skilled is dropping that level by 2. And, you know, you put on a dark cloak and try really hard, even at first tier, which first tier is like first level, you know, that's akin to being specialized. So you can still accomplish these things. And why that's important is that it aids in the story. We don't want characters to be limited when you're having this storytelling session, because then it just kind of takes kind of some of the oomph out of it. If your character wants to sneak into the bad guy's base but is not trained in sneaking, you know.
So because of this, because a lot of the skill elements, which ultimately all role-playing games are skill role games, it's just some of them are combat skills, some of them are social skills, some of them are non-combat skills, whatever the case may be. In, say, 3.5, if you don't have the skill, your attempt is basically going to fail. I mean, obviously there are outliers to that, but for the most part, you're pretty much up a creek.
Yeah, it's really hard.
In Cypher, if you do some preparation, for instance, you have a heavy fighter, he's got the big armor, he takes off his armor and wraps everything in cloth and makes an effort to be quiet, and he could roll well and do pretty good. Now, as you said, people who have the skill are better at it, but that's just like the real world. If you train for something, you're better than someone that doesn't. But there's been multiple times in our Cypher system games where the untrained guy just had a great day and he did better than the trained guy. The trained guy got overconfident, rolled poorly, and suddenly the stealthy guy is stepping on the magic twig that appears underneath his foot. I mean, it just happens.
Yeah. Now let me bring up a question that I get a lot, as I run a lot of demo games. We'll talk about that in a second. But when I'm explaining that and the skill system, inevitably I'll get a question about, like, well, you know, how are the different characters different then? If everyone can kind of do everything, you know, what makes a character special? And I think that's another boon to the Cypher system. And it's not alone in this. There are other game systems that again, do something similar to this. But in the Cypher system, you have what's called a focus. And that focus is really the heart and soul of your character. And it is going to give you some extra powers or abilities that other characters don't have. But when you're making up characters, and there's three parts to making up characters, you kind of you have your descriptor, which kind of gives you some background on the character.
Give me an example of a descriptor. A
descriptor would be something like strong or mad, or mad as in crazy, or driven, and that'll add into the mechanics of your character a little bit. But then you have your type. Your type is your core. It's akin to a class in other systems. And it varies depending on which flavor of Cypher system that you're playing. But you're going to have your martial class. You're going to have your skill-based class. You're going to have your dexterous-based class, your intellect-based class. Yeah. But then you have your focus. And your focus, when you're building these characters, that you're supposed to, every character at the table should have a unique focus. Because again, that's what really differentiates your character. And in the actual nuts and bolts of the character, it's not huge. I mean, it's definitely a different flavor, but it really comes down to the role-playing parts. And you should be playing your character as a character instead of as stats on a paper.
Exactly. And I think we should point out, too, that Numenera specifically, but Cypher as a whole, places a low value on combat as an advancement method. Is that a fair statement?
You could even say no value. In when you're earning experience points, you don't get experience points for combat. I mean, there's always exceptions to the rule, but you don't generally get experience points for combat. You get experience points for, you know, solving missions, finding long lost treasures, you know, the adventure part of the game.
Yeah. Or even, you could earn XP depending on how your GM runs the game, for social settings.
Sure.
I mean, if your goal is to prevent the war and you get into a negotiating table and you talk both sides into, you know, shaking hands, that's worth XP.
Yeah, absolutely.
And well, let me explain. Let's talk about the XP a bit, because I think the advancement system, since we've kind of segued into that, talk about the advancement system.
So the Cypher system has six tiers. And again, a tier is kind of equivalent to a level. And each tier is broken into four advancement phases. And each advancement phase is, I guess, acquired by spending 4 XP. So you get 4 XP, you spend it, and then you have a list of things that you can choose from. So it's very much kind of like a menu. and you pick what you want to make your character how you want it. And then some of the things you pick, such as if you picked an extra power as your choice, then you can pick from all of these different powers to even further, you know, make your character as you want it. Now, so that's how the advancement system works. And then as you hit the tiers, you know, you do the four times, you do the kind of mid-tier adjustment, and then you go up the next tier. When you go up the next tier, then you get a whole new set of powers and abilities from your different focus and type and what, you know, how you made your character.
Yeah, exactly. And to be clear, these, every tier you have to spend basically 16 XP four at a time on four different characteristics. One of them is extra points for your character. One of them is a skill. There's some variability in there, but you have to basically spend 16 to go up a tier. Now, getting XP, obviously, we discussed a bit earlier, is you succeed in some mission, you pull off some amazing bit of, you know, verbal or physical ledger domain that just blows your GM out of the water, so he gives you an XP, or my personal favorite, the GM intrusion.
That's awesome. Yeah, the GM intrusion is, again, it's one of those core elements of the system that really resonated as a GM. One thing we haven't talked about yet is the GM of the Cypher system does not roll any dice. The players roll all the dice. So if you as a player are attacking me as the GM's bad guy, you're rolling to hit. If I as a GM are attacking you, you roll to defend. So you roll all the dice. So the GM intrusion is a mechanic that allows the GM to impart some awesomeness into the story. Now, I will admit it is heavily used to the detriment of the players. Bad things happen. Rope bridges coming done. The, you know, giant ogre who you just killed's extended family show up. I mean, you know, whatever the case may be, it's often used to put more or harder tasks in front of the players. But that is not the sole you know, idea of a GM intrusion. It can be used for good things as well. Anything to change the game.
Now, so mechanically, how does it work?
Mechanically, it's just the GM will intrude and say, "Hey, this is happening." Now, to go along with that, as a little bit of a sweetener, the 2 XP is awarded to the lucky person who is the target of the GM intrusion, and that person keeps an XP and then gives it to one of his fellow players for whatever reason they deem appropriate. Or they could spend an XP that they have to block the GM intrusion. If they aren't interested in the shenanigans brought to the table, they do have an out.
Right. And most of the time, the GM intrusions aren't necessarily malicious, but they make things interesting. In the Numenera campaign I was running, the players were doing a heist. They were trying to break into a building, and two of them were hanging off the side of the building. And my GM intrusion was the watch decides to walk by and do a patrol. So they accepted that, and at that point it was, you know, try to become one with the building and not get noticed while hanging 12 feet above people who want to throw you in prison.
Right.
It added something, because at my heart, I knew the players would be able to climb the building, but adding an angry watch commander berating some rookies on the beat underneath them while they're trying to scramble up the building, I thought was funny. And it added quite a bit to the game.
Yeah, it does. And as a GM, you know, you have to be responsible with them, not only in what how you're intruding, but also you got to make sure that you are intruding, because it is an important source of XP for your players in the game mechanically. But just know, like, when I explain this, when I'm doing demos, some people get the impression that it's a kind of a check on the GM. Like, if they don't like what the GM's doing, they can spend the XP to block the intrusion. But it really is not like that. It shouldn't be like that, where the GM's kind of doing something mean and the players are having to spend XP to keep it at bay. it is, I mean, the GM should be bringing intrusions that make the story fun and exciting, and there should just be a rarity that a player would block that intrusion. But the players have the option to block the intrusion if they're really wanting to try to do something, or they're in the middle of something and, you know, they want it to succeed. First, again, because we're all telling the story here, it just gives them the option to kind of choose their own adventure, so to speak.
So, yeah, and whenever I've been on the receiving end of an intrusion, I usually block them just because I have a longer term plan or some other personal goal that it would interfere with, or something to allow me to demonstrate my ongoing awesomeness. And it would just get in the way of that, so that I block it for that reason. But most of the time we take them just because the XP, which additionally XP can be used to reroll a bad dice roll, is too valuable to give up.
Yeah. XP can do some other things as well, but, you know, so we're talking about why we love the Cypher system, and, you know, we've talked about the ease of the rules. We've talked about the ease of it, especially from the GM seat, the wonderful GM intrusion. But they upped their game a couple years ago when they took, you know, we talk now about the Cypher system, but, you know, before a couple years ago, it was just Numenera or the Strange, or Numenera and the Strange. So they with the success of those systems, they pulled out the Cypher system rules and added a lot of stuff to it and made it generic, kind of like, I don't know, what, GURPS and some other ones, Trent, you probably could rattle off the more generic.
GURPS, yeah. Savage Worlds, yeah. The Rift system, like the Palladian system, has been reskinned 25 times.
Yeah. So they came out with a Cypher system core book, and using that book, you now can really make whatever you want. I've made games in Star Wars. I've made games in the World of Warcraft. I mean, it's really easy now to put the Cypher system to whatever you love to do. And, you know, they've done some other worlds on their own. We've got Predation, Gods of the Fall, and Unmasked, as the time of this podcast just dropped into my mailbox a couple of days ago. So these are worlds akin to Numenera and the Strange. They are Cypher system worlds, but they're not as supported, I guess, as the other main lines. But really, its Cypher system has shown its flexibility and its adaptability to pretty much do anything that you want to do as a GM.
So you run more of these, because I think we should mention that Stuart runs at multiple conventions.
Yes.
Support of.
Yeah, so I love the Cypher system so much, I signed up to be part of their asset team program, which means that I go out and run demos for people who've never played before and show them how awesome the system is. So I if anyone's interested in that, we can put a link to how you get involved in that in the show notes. But yeah, I mean, the system is just, it fits me as a player, yes, but as a GM, like a glove. I mean, this is how I want to play the game. And it just seems to be getting better. I mean, they have, so recently they've came out with an instant adventures. They have one for Numenera and they have one for the Strange, and some of the adventure kind of material that's coming out in later books are in this format. But it's an adventure that you could sit down with no prep and, you know, read it for maybe 10 minutes and then run a game for people. It's designed in a way that makes it really easy. It just distills everything down to two main pages and two other supporting pages. It really is like, you know, you open the book and a left and right side, and you can run the whole adventure right from that. Oh, you know, 4 or 6 hours, however long.
Yeah, I've used those. I'm quite fond of that. The system does lend itself to people who are a little more extemporaneous, who can sort of generate on the fly for those very light modules. But that's the intent. The intent is for more of a cooperative storytelling experience as opposed to a linear dungeon crawl. And that's the main selling point for me, is it focuses more on story. Numenera and the Cypher system is about the story first. And if you roll dice occasionally, that's great too. but I don't want to oversell that element either. I mean, it's not diceless. There's plenty of dice rolling in there, but it just seems to be dice rolling with a purpose instead of just supporting some arbitrary mechanics.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
So, yeah, if you're interested in the Cypher system at all, I'll put a couple of links up in the show notes. Stu will send me, and I shall post as well, the asset team recruitment information. And then from that, I invite you to investigate. They have some quick start rules, I believe, for Cypher.
I don't know if I'd say quick start rules, but there is, if anyone's interested in getting into the game, there is the Numenera starter set, and it's just for Numenera right now, but it's like a little box set that'll come with everything that you and your group would need for, you know, I don't know, probably 8-12 hours worth of gaming. I think it's one adventure. It comes with the rules primer, character sheets, even dice are in there. So really you could go from zero and get that and try it out. And if you like it, then you can, you know, expand into the greater world of any of the systems.
And of course, we're available. Drop us a line if you have any further questions about Numenera and the Cypher system. If you're interested in playing with us, we'd be happy to point you in the right direction. And with that, we're done for the day. So have a wonderful time playing Cypher, and we'll see you next time.